Here we go. What's going on, champ? I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, man, no problem.
What's cooler, bro? Seeing yourself on your first baseball card that the UFC put out or being in a video game?
I'd probably say a video game, right? Like, as a kid, you always, like, played, like, Madden, created your own character, NBA 2K, whatever it was when you were a kid playing a game and you created your own guy. It's like, damn, it'd be awesome to be on a video game. You know? So it's just insane that ended up happening.
That's wild shit, man. You're this badass fighter. You went to war in the ring, but you got a little man. What corny stuff does he make you do that you're like, you walk away and you're like, bro, I was the champ. I don't believe I'm doing this with my kid.
I don't know, man. Nothing corny, but just, I'm just dad, right? I ain't no world champion to him. I'm just a normal person, you know?
I want to talk about UFC and fighting and stuff, but what you're doing now, I don't have Instagram. I went to my wife's page. I was dying to have you on. You're so into nutrition now. You educate yourself. You're educating others. What exactly are you doing with Wild Society Nutrition and all the other ventures? Because the transformation, you put up the side-by-side, you're like 125, 185. It's a different person. But in all seriousness, what are you doing with nutrition? Because it seems like you really made sure to educate yourself about this.
Yeah, man, just naturally throughout my career, it's been a gradual incline on knowledge. I mean, I think everyone in general, right? Like, when I first started fighting, coming out of college, I didn't give a shit what I ate, what I drank. Like, I just worked my ass off, right? I figured if I worked harder, it didn't matter, right? I remember one of my buddies very early, before anyone was gluten-free, Danny Castillo was gluten-free, and no one even knew what gluten was, I felt like. I was like, what the fuck gluten, Danny? Just like, we go out to eat and be like, hey, give me his gluten. I'll eat whatever he's not eating. I don't even know what gluten is. Just give it to me, you know? And so I used to just think working harder would always get me to the top, and which it did, right? Like, even when I was world champ, I was like, I had a decent diet, but not as refined as it got later in my career. And all because it came from meeting a strength conditioning coach, Sam Calavita, out of the training lab. ever since 2017, I've been working with him and really just learned a lot when it comes to optimal nutrition, supplementation, training schedules, just all around being like the healthiest human being you could be. And he was ahead of his time, like all these new fads like the Gary Breckas and all the stuff that's happened.
Yeah.
Like, we've been doing that shit since 2016, 2017. And now it's awesome that it's so knowledgeable for a lot of people because that's what started my nutrition company. You know, I used to be sponsored by Muscle Farm, supplement company that's been around for a long time. They weren't creating products that I would take, but I was getting paid by them to post about it. And so towards the end of my career, and I was working for them, helping them try to revamp some products, I just said, you know what, man, I could just do a better job myself, and decided to make a run at it. You know, I figured, if I can be the best in the world at fighting, why can't I create the best supplement line as well, too, you know?
And your supplements, all natural, right? No sugar, none of that stuff, right?
Yeah, it's got no sugar. It's got no artificial sweeteners, no artificial flavors, no artificial dyes, nothing, right? So I built it for the natural sector. I built it for the whole foods, the sprouts of the world, people that are health conscious, right? So grass-fed, organic, just everything is fitting the natural diets and trends that are going on now anyways. And I released in Sprouts Farmers Market nationwide before I sold anything online or anything. I went straight to retail. I didn't put it on my website. I didn't build a website like a lot of other athletes or fighters do and just endorse a product. I went full scale, spent the big bucks, made great product, and got it on the shelf at Sprouts, which is pretty cool.
What's actually the process? Everyone, oh yeah, I came out with this protein powder, this protein stuff. What's the process of, like, because you're a chef now, you're a chef and a scientist putting shit together. What's that process like?
It's fun for me because I was into it, right? I was into what whey proteins I'm taking. I'm all animal based when it comes to proteins, and obviously I eat my veggies and whatnot, but when it comes to supplementation and putting on muscle mass and being healthy, I'm animal based. And so just diving into the science of what I wanted to create, what I wanted to drink. And, you know, I always took a whey protein isolate after working out because it's the most rapidly absorbed protein. And then this new protein came out, which is a clear whey. And because it's clear, you can make it taste like fruity, kind of like a Gatorade. I was like, you know what? Like, I take a lot of electrolytes. I take an isolate after workouts. Let's combine them, right? So combined my own whey protein isolates with electrolytes. It's first and only of its kind. And then I use a concentrate as well too for my protein throughout the day. I'm on a very high protein diet to keep all muscle mass, even when I was competing. And it concentrates great because it's kind of like a whole meal, right? It's got the good fats in it. It's got the good carbohydrates. And protein synthesis takes about like 6 hours to happen. Mm-hmm. Right? So you can drink that for breakfast and having protein synthesis and absorbing branched amino acids throughout the day. Or I'll drink it like an hour and a half before I go to bed, so I'm absorbing protein while I'm sleeping. So that's the concentrate. But then the isolate I have is for specifically for like post-workout or while I'm working out. Right, so that process is just, I have an advantage because I just want to, I want to create what I like, right? Like what I enjoy. And that's, you know, grass-fed liver capsules. That's energy drinks that I got here. And like I said, my isolates, my concentrates, electrolyte powders. I got some jerky snack products that are coming out here soon. So we're going to be like a full-blown nutrition company, not just a protein company.
Now, only online for me. I'm in New York, so no stuff up in here in New York yet, right? Only online for us out here.
Probably right now, yeah, because we're in Sprouts. Mm-hmm. We'll be in GNC. I don't know if there's a GNC.
Oh, of course, yet. Yeah. I live in Brooklyn. There's a ton of GNCs over here. All right.
Yes, yeah, so we'll be in GNC towards the middle or beginning of Q1. We'll be in Vitamin Shoppe in Q1.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah, so we're getting into 1,800 doors of GNC, which is amazing. I have some like longevity products that are coming into GNC. My isolates will be in GNC, my energy drinks. And then other than that, we're available on our website, wildsocietynutrition.com, and also Amazon. We're having like, you know, everyone's doing the big Black Fridays through the weekend sales right now. So Amazon and Wild Society Nutrition having big sales and stuff, you know.
What is your diet like? Give me a regular day, nothing crazy, no cheat days. What's your regular diet like? A random Tuesday you're going to work out. What's your diet like?
Yeah, man, I don't have cheat days. I've been very strict in my diet probably for the last like 5 years.
Oof.
I kind of get obsessed when I get into something.
Yeah.
It's just same way with fighting, right? I lived in the gym and kind of treat ever since I met Sam Calavita, I switched my diet completely. I don't ever eat sugar. So no like added sugars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't eat any kind of breads or flours or a lot of grains like that. So I guess like paleo, I guess you'd say, right? Yeah. So I eat like 6 eggs in the morning, maybe some meat with it. I'll eat some, when I'm putting on weight, I'll eat a lot of white potatoes. There's a diet I'll follow sometimes when I'm trying to stack weight on, I'll do like 3 potatoes a day, but stack it with a lot of meat because that white potato will spike my insulin to help me count some size. But usually just eggs in the morning. A lot of times I'll do a ribeye for lunch and then whatever the wife's cooking for dinner, you know. Just 95 grams of protein ribeye for lunch, you know.
That's great. It's like sure, it's basically carnivore except for your dinner.
Yeah, I eat vegetables. I eat a ton of fruit, a lot of mango, a lot of apples, a lot of grapes, blueberries. So I eat, and not carnivore because I eat a lot of fruit.
Yeah.
And then I'll eat my veggies as well too, just depending on what's in season or whatnot.
One last question about the protein and stuff. Rocket Pop flavor.
Yeah.
Yo, how is that no sugar? I actually saw it right before it came on. I'm like, let me scroll. I'm like, holy shit, bro. How sick is it? Because I'm actually going to order it, obviously, when we hang up.
How sick is it, man? So, Rocket Pop, I love it. I like a tart, like sour flavor of sweetness. And it's really sweet, but it's sweetened with stevia and monk fruit. So, again, that's how it doesn't have the sugar in there. It's got the food coloring from spirulina. So, there's no, like, dyes or anything, right? But I like Rocket Pop because it's tastes exactly like the Rock Bomb. It's got that lemon flavor with it as well. I think our number one seller is the strawberry coconut.
Okay.
That one's bomb. I turn that one into – I mix it into my yogurt and make like a yogurt, like a strawberry coconut yogurt with it. And I'll freeze it and put it in my creamy and make a frozen yogurt. Shit's amazing.
Bro, I'm stoked to try it, man.
Hell yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Here we go. Grew up in Cali.
Yep.
You wrestled at a young age. Play any of the sports or no?
Yeah, at a young age I did. I played a little bit of everything. Like I played soccer, baseball. Then I got old enough in like fifth or sixth grade, started playing football, wrestled since I was 8. Dabbled in some golf and never competitively. But I played a little bit of everything. But then once my sophomore year in high school, I quit all other sports and only focused on wrestling because the writing was on the wall. Like I wasn't going to be playing football, you know what I mean? Like – even though they put me a middle linebacker because I was mean, too small, you know, like trying to throw my body weight around, and it just, the writing was on the wall that I was going to be a wrestler. I was good at it, and like I said, I get addicted to whatever I'm going to put my mind to, and just went all in with wrestling.
And then you got a full ride, Cal State Fullerton.
Yep.
Here's what's crazy, and I always have, like, obviously I have a lot of fighters on, a lot of athletes. You're a dominant, you're one of the best fighters, honestly, in the country, full rides, but there's never that next step. You're a good basketball player, you go into the league. Football player, baseball, wrestling, you can dominate in wrestling, and it's like, well, what's the next step? How frustrating is that? Because I know you're going to go the PA route. Isn't it frustrating, like, I'm one of the best athletes in the world, and yet I have to go get a regular job, even though I'm a top athlete? Isn't that kind of weird when you're in college?
It is, man. It's definitely weird. And thank God for fighting, right? But not all wrestlers can be a fighter.
No, not at all. You made it, yeah.
You got to be coordinated. But, yeah, it's a little bit frustrating, right? But I was a lot better fighter than I ever was a wrestler. I mean, I was a good wrestler. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I was on a full ride. I did pretty good, but I never excelled like I did at fighting. I picked up on striking so much that fighting was more of a sport for me. Like, I would have been – I'm glad I wasn't, but if I would have been raised this way as a kid, I think I would have been a phenomenal kickboxer, you know, just because of being ambidextrous and really just picking up the sport fast. But wrestling is what made me a champion. Without wrestling, I would have never been a champion. I wouldn't have had the work ethic that I had and just the determination, you know.
Right now, if someone wants to do MMA or whatever the discipline is, they can go on YouTube, study it, DIY. Okay, I'm going to learn how to do it. When we were a little younger, we didn't pull it up. So how'd you, I don't want to say think of different moves wrestling, how'd you increase your thing without just practicing the same shit over and over?
For wrestling?
Yeah.
Yeah, practicing that shit, same shit over and over, and toward the basics, you know, won you matches. But then I would go to all these summer clinics. Like, I go to the Zeke Jones camp or, you know, these Oklahoma State camps. And you learn from the college kids. You learn from Olympic champions. You kind of learn as you go. There's a couple, like, I got older, they had some DVDs I could buy, right? We had VHSs even too in the beginning. You'd be able to buy some of that stuff, but mainly I think most of the technique came from doing like summer camps as a kid.
Now take me through this. You graduate, you're gonna be a PA, but yet you go in 2010 King of the Cage. How'd that transition go? Like, what do you, like, hey, I want to fight, I want to show up? What's that missing link that no one ever knows how to get into the fight game like that?
I never thought I was going to fight. I just never reached my goals in wrestling. You know, I made it to nationals 3 times, never All-American. You know, you got to set your goals high. I wanted to be an All-American. I wanted to be a national champion. And that never happened, you know.
Okay.
And I was ranked. I'd be ranked top 10 in the nation throughout the season. I have a sick-ass season. And then I would always tank towards the end of the year. And I found out why later. But I'd always tank. So I never, like, reached my goals, and it was always because I was overtrained. I didn't know what overtraining was back then, right? Not until I became a professional. I was with one of those coaches that just ran us into the ground and would do good in the middle of the season and just crash. But because of that, I wanted to still compete. I didn't know at what, right? So Mark Munoz was a UFC fighter, was my
assistant. Oh, shit, he's coming on next week. That's wild.
Oh, dope. Hell yeah. He's like – he's one of the most amazing human beings in the world. He was my assistant wrestling coach at Cal State Fullerton my last 2 years. And after I graduated, I didn't want to be done competing. I wanted to stay in the gym. I wanted to do something. And he was fighting. And so I would travel and meet him up at his gyms and go do jiu-jitsu with him and his buddies. But all his buddies were massive, right? Like, he's training with big guys. And I would hold my own. I would do really good against these big guys. And Mark kind of sat me down one day. I was at his wrestling camp, He has a really good wrestling camp over the summer that he does. And Uriah Faber was there to come coach it, and I was coaching it. And he introduced me to Faber, and he sat me down. I was like, man, I think you'd be a great fighter. You're a mean-ass wrestler. I think you should give this fighting thing a shot. I was like, what? I'm like, I'm enrolled in grad school, dude. I'm going to be a physician's assistant. He's like, yeah, man, I don't know. I just think you'd be good. Just opportunities there, you know? I remember I went home and sat down with my girlfriend that she followed me down to school down at Fullerton and told her, I was like, hey, I'm going to drop out of school. I'm going to move up to Sacramento. She got a full-time job. She graduated, so she got a full-time job. I was like, I'm going to drop out of school. We're living together. I'm going to move to Sacramento now and become a fighter. And luckily, my girlfriend, which is now my wife, knew me very well. She just knew me so well. She just knew that, like, I wasn't going to be a 9-to-5 guy. Like, she was, like, real worried about me going to grad school, and the only reason why I took school serious was because of wrestling, kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, yeah, I think you should go for it. So I moved up there. She ended up following me, like, I don't know, 6 to 9 months later up to Sacramento, and joined Team Alpha Male, and the rest was kind of history. You know, I always told myself, I'd give myself a year. If I'm any good at fighting, I'm going to test myself against the best in the world. You know, the Raya Favors, the Joseph Benavidez, the Chad Mendes of the world. I'm going to go put myself in the shark tank. If I'm any good, I'll stick with it. If not, I'll go back to school. I can always go back to school, you know.
Wow. So I
dropped out of school, packed up my Tacoma. I met Uriah at that wrestling camp at Marvin Gaye's wrestling camp. He's like, yeah, man, come on up. I got a room for you and everything. I'm at one of my houses. I was like, what? Dope. So I packed all my shit up. I drove to Sacramento. I get there. The guy's not even in town. Like, he's like somewhere in the country probably. And I shoot him a text. He's like, who's this? I'm like, fucking, this is, my name is TJ. He told me to move up this way. He's like, oh, yeah, Justin Buckles at the gym. He'll show you around. I'm like, all right. Justin Buckles was in the UFC at the time. I show up. He's behind the desk. I'm like, hey, man, you're right. He told me to talk with you. Like, I'm supposed to be moving into one of his houses. He's like, oh, really? Took me over. He had like 3 houses on this block. They called it the block. And he didn't have a room for me. There was nothing, right? So I was like, I had all my shit there. So Buckle's like, hey, man, you can, like, sleep in the living room. I was like, fuck it, man. So I got a futon, crashed out in the living room paid, like, $500 a month to live in his living room.
No shit. Bro, that's, like, old school, like, WWF stories. Like, how guys, like, Mick Foley and shit, who wants to make it, like, slept on couches. Bro, that's intense.
Yeah, man, it was cool. It was cool. I mean, so I lived at the gym, and I actually liked that I moved into that living room because I ended up moving into the house that Master Tong lived into as well, which was their Muay Thai trainer.
Mm-hmm.
He lived in the garage. and me and him became like best friends. I would drive him everywhere. He was a degenerate gambler. I'd give him money all the time. But because, like, we got so close, he would train me every day, you know? So, and I just fell in love with Muay Thai and picked up fast.
Wow. And then I just did a quick Google search on you. You were on the Ultimate Fighter show.
Yeah.
And with Dennis Bermudez. So he's been on before. That madman, I went out with him before. I didn't know what kind of dude he was. I'm not the biggest UFC guy, but he came on my show. We had mutual friends. He comes on. He's like, I do my show from a bar in the city. He's like, you want to go out afterwards? Bro, he's an absolute maniac. Was he crazy in the house?
He wasn't drinking because he made it to the finals.
Okay.
So, I mean, he's always a good time, right? Like, he, like, high energy, good time. But he wasn't drinking because he made it to the finals. Yeah, me and him and Diego and Dotson all made it to the finals, so we were all sober, you know, sober Sally's the whole show until the last night when Dana took us out and gave us a bunch of money and let us loose in Vegas and just wrecked shop, you know.
When you get the call that you're gonna fight on a UFC event, that's like a basketball player getting drafted, MLB minor league, you getting the call up to the show. Who's your first phone call when you find out you're fighting in the UFC?
Well, mine was that I was going to – so I went and did these tryouts for the Ultimate Fighter, right?
Yeah.
Because it was, like, perfect timing. I'd only been fighting for a year, maybe not even that. I only had, like, 4 fights. And UFC bought WEC. So – because they didn't have 45s to 35s until they bought WEC. And so since they bought that, the weight classes, they're like, we got to do an Ultimate Fighter. So you go out to New Jersey, you do tryouts, and you, you know, you hit mitts in front of them. You do some jiu-jitsu. They interview you, things like that. So – my first thing was that I got on the Ultimate Fighter, right? But then you weren't allowed to tell anyone.
Okay.
Obviously, I told my family, you know, right? Like, hey, shut the fuck up. Don't say nothing. I don't want to get in trouble. But I'm on the Ultimate Fighter. I leave next week. You're like, fuck, next week? I'm like, yeah. pack my shit up. But then the season that I was on, you had to fight to get into the house. Okay. So if you showed up with 32 guys there, they only keep 16. So you have to fight to win to get into the house. And so you go to Vegas for 3 days. They lock you in your hotel room in Palace Station, shitty hotel.
Yeah.
They lock you in the Palace Station until it's the time to fight. You know, like, you make weight and then fight. So when I didn't come home, everyone's like, all right, he made the show. You know, like,
oh, shit, man.
Yeah. Because you don't have your phone, nothing. You can't tell no one, you know. So you're gone for 6 weeks. If I would have came home, then I obviously wouldn't have made the show. So, but after that, you know, made a few phone calls saying, like, hey, man, I'm in the fucking finals, you know? I mean, you know you're in the finals. You know you're made the UFC. So my first phone call, I mean, my wife, or my girlfriend at the time, you know, like, I called her as soon as I got done with the show. It was like, baby, we're in the finals, you know? Like,
that is wild.
I wasn't making any money. I was, like, doing some landscape, bullshit landscaping on the weekends to be able to hopefully make a little bit of money. And me and my wife had a – my girlfriend had a real small apartment, and mainly I was living off of her, you know? Like, so to give her a phone call, I was like, all right, I'm getting a little bit of cash. You know, I got to bring it home 10 grand or something. I don't remember what it was, maybe more. But, like, just changed your life, you know?
When you were a UFC fighter, you're winning and stuff, and then you go down to Brazil – and is there like a home cage advantage? Like when you're fighting local, is it different than fighting in Brazil? Like you're fighting in Brazil, completely different atmosphere. Like I know you were fight of the night. That obviously helps. Your first L. One, how do you deal with that mentally? Like, holy shit, are they going to cut me? I don't know if you had a contract. And two, fighting in another country, completely different or not really?
Yeah, definitely different, depending on the country, especially Brazil, right? Because they are massive, big supporters of the sport, yeah. Right? When you go, I fought in Abu Dhabi, and it's like, ah, it's, well, yeah. They don't have, like, hometown heroes, right? Like, it's not like whatever. But in Brazil, it's different. Canada, same kind of thing. I was fighting someone that wasn't from Canada. But when you go to Brazil, you're pretty sure you're going to fight a Brazilian, right? Yeah. That's where they stack it up. So, yeah, it's unfortunate because that loss was a split decision that I shouldn't have lost, man. Him and Dominic Cruz, if I wouldn't have lost those split decisions, I would have been on a massive win streak, you know? But that's just the way the cookie crumbled. But yeah, it's definitely different. You know, the food's different. You know, you can't, like, buying water down there is crazy because all their water has sodium in it, right? You're trying to cut weight and you don't want sodium and you're like, all their water has it in. So yeah, there's just different things.
Now, we're not going to go fight by fight, of course. UFC 173, when you win the belt, how do you pronounce the name? Barrow?
Barrow.
Barrow. Undefeated. You were 8-1 dog. One, yeah. Are you allowed to bet on yourself or no?
Yeah, you can bet on yourself. You just can't bet against yourself.
So 8-1 dog, you win, which that was what made your name. How do you celebrate winning the belt? They put the belt on you. You're in Vegas. How do you celebrate that night?
You don't sleep.
Let me ask you this. And listen, real talk right now. Because I always said if I was a boxer and I won a title at the Garden, I'd walk around New York with the belt around, walking through Times Square. Do you just rock the belt the whole time?
I didn't. I didn't take the belt out with
me.
Why no? I don't know, man. I guess I'm just not that kind of person. Even like throughout my career, you can kind of tell I'm not like, I don't try to be super flashy. Yeah, am I cocky? Am I confident? Yes. But I'm not someone that like tries to bring attention, you know? Like, to be honest, I try to avoid it a lot of times. But it was amazing. Like, went out to multiple, like, a lot of my buddies were in town, had a couple after parties, and then an after party. And I remember walking into Light at Mandalay Bay.
Okay.
And the whole, like, everything, I didn't tell no one that who I was and showing up. I just showed up, and as soon as I walked on the floor, like, all the lights went out, music stopped, and then they started playing, dun-dun-dun, the champ is here, and that is, like, big
thing.
Like, it was cool, man. Like, I didn't tell them I was coming either, you know, and it was, that was, like, my first, like, thing of stardom, like, I was recognized a little bit, but yeah. Like, I'd never been on a main card, let alone a pay-per-view event, right? So I went from, because if someone got injured, they needed me to step up, and I stepped up and took the fight, like I said, 8-1 underdog. But I was always on, like, the fight night cards, and I was always on the prelims, right? Like, I was a lighter weight class, didn't have a name yet, right? So I went from that to having my billboard on the side of MGM. I was like, fuck, this is wild. And then, like, that kind of shit happened, and I just kind of got thrown to the wolves.
Now, yeah, because they don't prepare you for that. Now, after you won the title, didn't you get married, like, right after that?
3 weeks, yeah. I was with my girlfriend. I've known her since grammar school and now a wife. She was like, we're planning our wedding. We're engaged. And she wanted to, like, get married fast. So we got engaged in December of 2013. She wanted a quick wedding. So I was like, I can't, like, pick a date, like, I don't know when I'm going to be in fight camp, right? The UFC just calls me and tells me, hey, we need you to fight. Like, all right, cool. So I just told her, like, pick a date. And she did. And what was that? June 26th, right? And I ended up fighting, 4 weeks before that,
holy
May 24th. So, yeah, it was a hell of a wedding. We went to Mexico to get married, too, which was a lot of fun. So I did have my belt there. I remember, like, dancing with my belt. My friends were there. Like, it was awesome. It was good.
You mentioned Dominic Cruz, and that fight, I hate to say this, because so many people are like, oh, you were legit robbed. Like, if you asked UFC guys who were straight up like, yeah, bro, if you go on Twitter now, put your name in, that fight still comes up that you were robbed. How, I don't want to use the word mentally, how much patience do you have to have? Like, I watch a fight, I have fighters on. So obviously then you have a connection with them. I'm like, holy shit, like Jared Gordon came on, then he gets robbed when he fought. I'm like, like I was so angry. I'm texting, I'm like, bro, he's like, bro, it's, you know, it's what happens. I'm like, no, like, how do you deal with that? Like, you just legit put your life on the line. You know you won. How do you stand there, like, and have the patience now to go back? Like, all right, let me get back to the drawing board. Like, how do you deal with that?
I'm a poor loser, man. I really am. I've never been a good loser. So I don't just say, like, that shit happens. I fucking pissed.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fucking pissed because especially a fight like that, like, they stole millions of dollars out of my pocket. Like, millions, right? Yeah. Like, I would have been on
that's your livelihood.
I would have been on the longest win streak in UFC history. I would have, like, had the most title defense. Like, I went from, like, say I beat Cruz, like I did.
Mm-hmm.
I fought the – so I didn't get I didn't get an instant rematch, which I should have, which was complete fucking bullshit. So I was pissed about that as well. I didn't get that. And then to make things worse, Cruz fights Faber, which was ranked number 5. I fight Ascensal, number 1.
Mm-hmm.
Beat him. And then I don't get a rematch again. So then he's gonna they're going to have Cruz fight Cody. So then I fight Lineker, number 1. So I pretty much defended my belt twice again, fighting number 1 contenders. Well, he's fighting 5-8. And I beat them, and then I finally get my rematch. I get my belt back against Garbrandt. So, you know, when I was on a 4-fight win streak, Cruz should have been 5. Ascensal 6, Lineker 7, Garbrandt. So I should have been on a 9-fight title fight win streak, you know. And, like, that changes a lot, man. It changes my whole legacy. It changes a bunch of shit. Like, you know. It is what it is. I mean, now I said, now it is what it is now.
No, but at the time, years later, of course.
I was fucking pissed, bro. Like, but I guess that's what kept the fire going because I'm a poor loser. kept the fire going, right? Like, it's like, that's never fucking happening again. And I did learn a big lesson in that Cruz fight. That was the first fight I ever fought angry.
Okay.
I'm a better fighter when I'm having fun, right? Like, when I'm out there showing off, dancing, smiling, like, that's like, that's when I'm, like, in my flow state. Cruz was the first fighter I had to deal with that was talking shit. Got under my skin. It was, like, the first guy in the interview that I wanted to stop the interview, and I wanted to get up and punch him. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, dude, what the fuck am I doing when you're sitting here? I'm like, we're going to fight. Like, fuck you. I don't want to do this no more, you know? Like, but then I went out the first 2-3 rounds trying to knock him out,
mm-hmm.
you know, to where then, like, the 4th and 5th, I finally calmed down. It was just, like, piecing him up, you know? So – unfortunately, I had to learn the hard way, and luckily I learned that because then I fight Garbrandt like 3 fights later, and that fight was, you know, tons of animosity. So I was like, you know what? Let that one slide off the shoulder. I'm not mad. Like, whatever. Just going to fight this guy and know that I'm the better man. You know?
2 things on that. Back to the Cruz stuff. You didn't get the rematch. How does a fight like that happen now? Then your next fight. Are you calling your agent? Are you getting calls? Let's fight this dude. Are you like, no, I want to fight this guy, like, you guys put it together or it's set up already for you guys?
Oh, bro, I did whatever I possibly could to try to fight Cruz again. I was hitting up Dana.
Yeah.
I was hitting up the Fertittas. I was, you know, I went and got $100,000 out of the bank, which was a fucking process to do. Like, going to, like, I want my money. They're like, oh, well, we got to call a bank. I was like, fuck. I was like, all right, well, order the money. I want my money. So I got $100,000 just so I could take a picture of it in front of my belt and be like, Cruz, I'll bet you my show purse that I will, like, that I'll whoop your fucking ass again. And if I lose, you get all my money. You know, all my money. But that didn't work. All that shit didn't work. He wouldn't respond back to it because he didn't want to fight me again. So I did whatever I possibly could to get that fight. And since it wasn't happening, and as soon as I heard he was fighting in Faber, mm-hmm. I asked for number 1 contender because I want to get my belt back. So I need to beat the best guy, right? Like, I beat number 1 contender, I'm back at my spot. But now to beat a couple number 1 contenders.
I remember the Cody thing. Only, like I said, I watch it now. Yeah. My partner is obsessed with it. Like, my partner work is obsessed with it. And that whole Cody thing, that was like rap beef. Like, bro, he's like, this is craziness. Is there any way, and I know every interview you do it. Can you give me the abbreviated version of what caused it? Because there was legit animosity, and you guys were boys, and you guys hated each other. So as an amateur, like, fan of the sport, what exactly happened?
Yeah, man. To be honest, the beef, I mean, it ended up being with him because I was fighting Cody.
Okay.
But the beef was against Alpha Male. And when I say Alpha Male, I mean Uriah Faber, right? Yeah. So I'm UFC champion at Uriah's weight class, right? Like, he's been trying his whole life to try to get this belt. I come in, I get it. The first UFC champion at Alpha Male. I know this motherfucker's jealous, right? That's why it's called Alpha Male,
yeah.
right? So he's jealous. I become super tight with Dwayne Ludwig. I win the world title under Dwayne Ludwig. Dwayne Ludwig turned me into a striking killer, right? So when I first joined Alpha Male, we didn't have a coach. It was just fighters coaching each other, right? We just, like, showed up to the gym, a bunch of wrestlers learning how to beat the shit out of each other, and went out and fought, you know. But then there was, I don't know, five or six different title opportunities between Benavidez, Uriah, Mendez, that they didn't get the belt. They always came up just a little bit short. And so we all came to Uriah. We sat down. I was like, hey, man, we need a coach. Like, we need a head coach to push us to that next level. And to be honest, we need a striking coach. And we were doing a putting our feelers out there, trying to find a coach. I had no idea who Dwayne Ludwig was. Uriah's like, hey, I'm this guy, Dwayne Ludwig. He just retired. He was a UFC fighter, mainly a kickboxer. We looked him up. We're like, yeah, bring him out. So we tested him out for a day. Instantly, like, automatic instant fit with me and Dwayne. Like, me and, like, he drilled kickboxing like wrestlers drill wrestling. And it was just, like, for me, a match made in heaven. I was already kind of doing techniques that I didn't even know were correct until he showed up. Like,
wow.
Anyways, I became an absolute killer under Dwayne's tutelage. And then him and Uriah didn't see eye to eye, right? Like, money got involved and Uriah wasn't paying. So they made it, like, if you really want to get into it, right? So most coaches get paid 10% of a fighter's purse. It's okay. Usually that's pretty standard, right? And we're all paying Master Tong 10%. He was like our striking coach, but not a head coach, right? And we're all paying him 10%. Dwayne comes in and Uriah, like, finagles it. Like, hey, we'll pay you $40,000 or 5% of all the fighter's purse, whatever's greater. And he came in instantly. He was, like, way better than Master Tong. I love Master Tong. Yeah. He was my first striking coach. But just leaps and bounds better than him. And so I started just paying Dwayne 10%. I felt it was right. Mm-hmm. I was going to pay him 10%. Some of the other fighters, like, yeah, I agree with you. So some guys started paying in 10%. Kind of him, and he went back to Uriah and said he wanted this and that. They kind of butted heads and split ties. Dwayne went to Colorado. I was in fucking alpha male. I just won a world title.
Yeah.
Seriously, just won a world title, and Dwayne's like, damn it, I got to go back to Colorado. I'm like, bro, what the fuck? You know, and so I'm supposed to do a rematch against Burrell 8 weeks later, and I talk Dwayne into staying to Alpha Male 8 more weeks. He already sold his house and everything, so he moved in with me and lived with me for my supposed to be my second Burrell fight. It ended up being Soto fight. But anyways, long story, he moves back to Colorado. I start doing a back and forth thing. Like, when I get into fight camp, I would go, like, fly out to Colorado, train for a week there, come back, do a week in Sacramento.
Oh my God.
It was just ridiculous, right? It was, like, just too much on me. And I did that so I fought Soto, and then I fought Burrell. So I did that for my second Burrell fight, and it was just a lot. And then after that Burrell fight, I was fighting Cruz. So I took Faber to lunch. Mendez was with me at this lunch, and another buddy, Phil. And we go and sit down, because I wanted to tell him, like, hey, I'm going to do my full camp in Colorado.
Yeah.
Like, I can't be doing this back and forth. We don't have a coach in Sacramento. I'm training out in Colorado with my coach. And then I come back for a week, and I'm the coach. Like, I was the one coaching practices. Like, I can't do that. I'm fighting for world titles. And he's like, you're either with him or you're with us, right? He, like, thought of Dwayne as the enemy. So he gave me this ultimatum. And I was like, well, then fuck, I'm with Dwayne, dude. So he straight up, like, kicked me out of the gym. And then I become the bad guy, saying that I chose Dwayne over them by him kicking me out. So it was, like, a lot of drama that way. And it got built up by Conor McGregor, right?
Yeah.
Because before all this happened – that's right, I forgot about this. Before all this happened, Uriah was coaching against McGregor on Ultimate Fighter. And I had just defended my belt. So I wasn't at Ultimate Fighter yet. I was in training camp, and I went to defend my belt against Burrell. I fly to Vegas, like, a couple days after I defended my belt. And, like, I'm all hungover because I was out there partying with my boys because I just won a belt. We stayed out. We're living in Vegas. Like, stayed out way too late. I'm wearing sweatpants and, like, jersey. I'm all hungover, drinking coffee, walking to the gym, and fucking McGregor's there. I'll yeet out probably. Who knows? Just, like, have a good old time. I'll dress to the nines and be like, oh, there's that little snake. Call me. That's where it all started, the snake in the grass.
Oh, wow.
Because I was training in Colorado. But I was with Alpha Male at the time before I made the full mm-hmm. switch. And so he kind of called – he built this animosity with me and Uriah that turned into something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But it promoted the shit out of the fight.
Yeah. It was the greatest thing. I mean, obviously, if I wouldn't have lost the Cruz, I wouldn't have needed it.
Uh-huh.
But after losing the Cruz, like, I had a decent following, right? I had a big beat brow, and I started building up a decent following. But – my stardom didn't, like, really, like, explode until the Garbrandt's fights.
Now, you fought at the Garden there when you won. I'm a New Yorker, born and raised. You're a Cali guy. Does New York's like Madison Square Garden, does it still have the allure? Like sometimes you're from Minnesota, you're from Florida, you're a Cali dude. Is it like, fuck, bro, I'm fighting at the Garden?
Yeah, it's massive. I mean, all the biggest fights in the world.
The world. Like,
the biggest boxing fights in the world were always at Madison Square Garden.
At the Mecca, like, yeah.
That, MGM, like, I got to have some fights in some sick places, right? Like, but Madison Square Garden was by far tops them all, especially because that show was, we had an amazing show, like, UFC 217 or 207, which one was it? 217. It was 217. It was, I mean, it was a magical night, right? It was like three title defenses, three changing of the guards when it comes to the belt. It was sick. It was a great night.
My question is this. You win that fight. Do you hang around the fights to watch GSP? Do you watch the main events, or are you just going to leave? Like, I won, I'm out. Or do you hang around to watch the fights?
Because I'm a title fight and I was in one fight right before him, like, you can kind of watch it when you're in the back where you're doing interviews, right? Like,
okay,
you have, like, fucking 50 interviews when you get done with a fight when you win, you know? So it's like, most of your interviews are in your shorts, you're all bloody, whatever. Yeah. Then you go back and you get dressed to the nines, you come out and do the presser, like, so you don't really, I mean, you kind of watch it, like, I seen the finish and stuff, right? But when you're first getting into the UFC, yeah, I would stick around and watch the fights. I remember being in Montreal for one of my first close fights, and I win, I knock out Issy Tamura, then I go up in the stands and sit next to my parents. Like, and then a couple of people recognize me and shit, but I'm sitting in the stands with my parents watching the rest of the fights. You know, so.
Did you appreciate the moment, like, winning the title in Vegas, obviously you're in cloud nine. Then, you know, you lose a controversial decision, and now you win at the Garden. Was there ever a time before you walked out, or maybe right afterwards, you're pinching yourself like, holy shit, bro, like, I kind of made it? Or did you not appreciate the ride when it happened?
No, I definitely appreciated it. I appreciated it.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I really, just because how much I was, like, exploded onto the scene, like, it didn't happen gradually. Like, I went from an 8-1 underdog to fucking bam, title fight, this, that. Like, it's like, oh, shit, man. Like, life just changed like that. So you kind of have to, like, appreciate it, because I went from making $18,000 a show, $18,000 to win, to ripping my contract up and getting a fat bonus from Dana, being like, baby, we made it. You know what I mean? Like,
shit.
Probably don't ever have to have a real job ever again. Kind of thing, you know what I mean?
One last fight I want to talk about is when you lost all the weight, because now you're this – you're so knowledgeable about, if you need to lose 20 pounds, you'll lose it the healthy way. You're not going to just, you know, cut out this. I remember that fight, and I'm like, oh, my God, you looked like legit, like, crackhead on the subway. I'm like, I was actually worried for you. I'm like, I know, listen, I've had a lot of boxes on. I'm like, I know you had to cut weight. Was that an unhealthy, and this might be an ignorant question by me, and if it is, I apologize. Was that like an unhealthy way to cut it, or was it not? Was that Henry who'd you fight that one? Fight?
Henry Cejudo, yeah.
You looked like, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm like, bro, I'm worried about him.
Yeah, what's that movie where, what's his name, Christian Bale loses all that weight?
Yes, yeah, the machine.
I look like a meth head, bro. I look like a meth head that's been living on the street. And at the time, it's crazy, like, how much body dysmorphia. I thought I looked fucking great. You know what I mean? Like, at the time, right? I'm a world champion. I'm going to get a second belt. Like, I'm a fucking man. Like, I look awesome. Like, but no, now that I look back at it, I look fucking disgusting. And yes, it was, I mean, I did it as healthy as you possibly can, because I was, when I was with my coach and I was doing, I'm juicing, I mean, like, doing masticating juicing, cold press juicing, I am on a dope ass diet, all this stuff, but my body, with how much muscle mass I had on, was not naturally allowed to be at that weight class, and that's why I got in trouble.
Okay, yeah, because
I went full blown anemic. I'm like 5-6 weeks out from my fight camp, and I'm probably, what, low 40s, maybe getting into the high 30s and stuff. And my body shuts down, like, completely shuts down. I think I had, like, 4% body fat.
Oh, my God.
And so when you become anemic, your body stops producing red blood cells and starts producing white blood cells because it thinks you're, like, fucking dying, right? Yeah. So white blood cells are your defense mechanism. And so I don't want to wake up in the morning and train. I'm freezing cold all the time. I'm super tired. And, you know, that's where I make the fucking stupid-ass decision. I'm delusionally optimistic, which I wouldn't trade it for the world, because that's what got me to the top, and that's what's going to make Wallace Society the best nutrition company in the world, is because I'm delusionally optimistic. I'm going to always believe in myself no matter fucking what. I'm going to get it done. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to manifest this. But at the same time, it got me into trouble, right? It got me into my shoulder problems that I have. It got me into taking anemia medication that I knew I wasn't allowed to take. But to be honest, I took a D. Not, I didn't even feel normal. I still felt like shit. You know what I mean? Like, but I was chasing a dream. I was chasing millions of dollars. I was chasing stardom. I was chasing a legacy that, you know, was unheard of kind of thing, right? Like, McGregor's doing it. Look where he's fucking at kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I wanted, right? So I was like, just put my blinders on and win.
Your last fight, did you know going into that that was going to be your last fight? Because I know you fought that fight injured. And yeah. I always, because obviously became a fan of yours after the Cody thing. I'm like, dude, this guy's great. And they tried to make you the villain, but you were never a villain. I'm like, dude, this guy's a normal dude. They're trying to make him like this shit talker. They're forcing it out of him. Did you know that was your last fight? Because you were hurt. Why not just postpone the fight like other dudes? That's just not in your mentality, right?
Oh, so that's a packed question. So got suspended, right? Lost my belt. Fucking being the top of the world to the fucking lowest of lows. Like, just feeling like a real piece of shit. You know what I mean? Like, feeling bad about myself. 2 years off. Business fell apart because of COVID. Like, just a lot of shit just piled on top of me. You know, thing after thing after thing. I come back. I fight Sanhagen. Blow out my knee.
Yeah.
Destroy my knee. So I'm out for another year and a half. Like, just horrible, right? And then I get back into training camp. I know I'm going to fight. So this is what? April, right? Like, my knee's still a little sore, fucked up, but I'm getting back into training camp because I know I'm going to fight. Aljamain, didn't know the date yet, but it ended up being October, and I'm in April, May, right? So end of April, coming into May, and I'm just hitting mitts, and I go and throw like a big left hook, and I've had a bad shoulder. At this point, I've already had two surgeries on it. Oof. And I throw like a big left hook on the bag, and it just fucking pops, like, bad. Like, I just tore my rotator cuff from the bone. And it was really painful, and it was hurting. I had to get, like, some massages on it and stuff. And so I lost all external rotation. I had none. But I'm fighting Aljamain Sterling. His striking is god-awful. His striking, like, is pitiful, right? It's, like, it's hard to watch how bad it is. So I was like, you know what? Like, my grappling was fine. At the time, my grappling was completely fine. Like, I was doing great, fantastic grappling. Like, strength was all there. I just had no external rotation, so I couldn't really, like, throw a good jab. I had to flick it. I had to do flick jabs, things like that. I was like, I'm fighting Aljamain Sterling, though. It's like, it's not going to matter. Like, I'm going to beat this guy. Like, this is like a title fight. Like, he squeaked his way past Jan. Like, shouldn't have beat him. Got kneed in the head. Then he shouldn't have beat him the second time. I thought he lost. But I was like, fuck. This is just perfect, right? I'm fighting a guy that I don't think should even be champion. Like, I'm not going to turn this fight down. Like, this is amazing. I'm going to come back. I'm going to get my belt coming off. Like, I'll be the biggest heel in the world. Like, tell everyone to kind of, like, fuck off. I don't even care, right? Like, I'm taking the fight. Well, my shoulder gets worse and worse as I go through camp. I start cutting weight. I get stabbed through the camp. And so, I don't know, I'm 5 weeks before my fight, and I'm grappling, and I'm working on getting someone off my back because this guy's a backpack, right? Like, he's real good on the back. And I'm doing this drill where I get my back flat on the mat, and I reach back really fast and turn around. Working fantastic, but I subluxed my shoulder, and I'm 5 weeks out where it pops out. Pops back in. I'm like, oh, fuck. I knew that feeling because it was happening before my Garbrandt fights. But it hadn't happened in a while. And then leading up, I just got worse and worse and worse, and I started dislocating it and not going back in. I had to, like, really learn to get my shoulder back in the socket. But long story is, I probably dislocated my shoulder 20 times throughout that camp. And then once I got towards the end, it was like, I obviously needed surgery.
Yeah.
Right? I'm 36 years old. Need surgery, so that means I'm out for at least another year, probably a year and a half.
Okay.
So I'm going to be 38 when I'm returning, not getting a title fight, right, because I'm giving up my title fight chance. So my plan was to fight, win the belt, get surgery. Didn't think I was going to be done, right? Like, I thought that, like, this was still fixable, which this is the best I got right now. I can't lift my arm, you know?
Holy,
like,
shit.
I can't do this, which, so I got to get a shoulder replacement now, but at the time, I didn't know that. I thought, like, I'll fight. I'm going to knock Sterling out. I'm going to fucking tell this awesome story that I got one arm and I still beat this guy. Like, if I would have won, it would have been the greatest story of all time.
Yeah. Right?
But obviously, I didn't. And so, yeah, I mean, I did not know it was going to be my last fight. It wasn't my plan.
And now, one last thing before we just finish up with some little questions. You go to Panama and stuff and get all the stem cells done, right?
Yeah, I've gone to Panama 3 times. I've gone to Colombia 3 times. Yeah.
A lot of people go down there. They say it rejuvenates everything, changes you. And I don't know the answer to this, so hopefully you do. Why not? Is it available here, or is it not affordable here? Is that what it is?
No, it's – I so it's the FDA, man. It's a prescription drug. It's the $1 trillion prescription drug market, right? So as soon as they make stem cells that they can do out of the country legal here in the States, mm-hmm. it's going to wipe out sicknesses. Like, it's going to get rid of arthritis. It's going to, like, change a lot. And the prescription drug company doesn't want that. Right? There's too much money involved. And so the FDA is never going to approve it. Maybe eventually, fucking probably still going to be a while from now. But that's why you have to go to Colombia and spend a good
chunk of money. People say it changes your life. It says, like, it changes your life when you go down there.
Oh, depending on your ailments, it definitely can, right? Like, I mean, it's great for anti-aging, right? It's great for things you don't even know about. Like, I got rid of arthritis. I got rid of psoriasis. Like, so much stuff. I'm actually heading down to BioAccelerator here the first week of January. I've had three surgeries since my last fight. Two of them were massive. I'm trying to avoid a shoulder replacement is what I'm really trying to do because I'm not 60 years old. I shouldn't fucking have a fucking shoulder replacement. But unfortunately, the writing's kind of on the wall that I might have to. So what they did is because I dislocated my shoulder so many times, it wore a big dent in the top of my humerus. So they had to cut an orange slice out of the head of my shoulder, and they took a cadaver bone of someone's hip that matched my blood type.
What?
And they cut a orange slice out of it. They puzzle pieced it in there and cemented it in there so my shoulder's round again. And then I had something called chronic rotator cuff failure that my rotator cuffs have been torn for like 3 years and a bunch of times. And they kind of lose vascularity. They turn into like beef jerky. And so you can't – I tried sewing them back on, but it didn't work. They just like tore right away. So they took a piece of my lower trap out of my back, like a piece of it, and they put it in my shoulder to replace my rotator cuffs in the back. And it took, but it didn't work. And so then the doctor noticed I had a torn subscapulars, which is another rotator cuff in the front. So he took a piece of my lower lat and put that one in the front. All of it is attached. But unfortunately, with the all the work that I had done, the nerves aren't firing now. And so that's why the muscles aren't working. I can't – like my front delt is just non-existent. The trap that they put in there is not working completely because the nerves aren't firing, so I can't lift my arm up.
Oh, my God.
So I'm going to go to BioAccelerator and see if I can kind of rejuvenate my nerves. And if that doesn't work, then probably in 6 months I'll have to get a reverse shoulder replacement.
Holy shit, bro. That's intense.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks, man. You know, that's like I said, like my delusional optimism, me thinking I was going to beat Aljamain Sterling with one fucking arm, got me into the situation as well. You know what I mean? So it's a true blessing to have it and to be that mentally tough, but it's also, you know, your biggest enemy at the same time, right? So you just got to guide it a little bit, you know?
I kept you on here for 50 minutes. Ready to finish up with some quick hit questions?
Dope. Let's do it.
Here we go. You and I are at a bar in New York City. Who's the coolest cat in your phone that if you texted them, they would text you back?
The coolest cat. Fuck, man. I don't know. That's a great question. I have some big names in my phone, but someone's got a big following that I've enjoyed and spent a lot of time with? Someone like Dan Bilzerian or David Goggins?
All right, those are both awesome. All right, those are good answers. Okay. Last show you binged watched.
Well, I'm doing one right now. I can't binge it because it's fucking coming out week from week. It's called Silo.
Okay.
Silo's good, but what was the one before that? I rewatched the Vikings again. I just did it. Like, I rewatched the Vikings again.
One sporting event in history you could witness live. First row, you sit in front row. Any sporting event in history, what is it?
I mean, it's hard to beat a UFC fight, dude. Just a big, big card, right? Some big UFC fights. I mean, to be honest, I don't know if you could beat it.
No. I went to my first one working was 309 at the Garden.
Oh, dope.
It was the first time I ever went to one. I was working, and I'm like, bro, this is insane.
This is a good card, too. That was good.
It was wild.
Yeah, it's awesome.
How about coolest piece of memorabilia that you own?
The night that – right here. Hold on. This is pretty cool. I mean, I got a lot of cool stuff in all the years fighting and whatnot.
Okay.
But this is pretty dope, talking about Madison Square Garden. I'll hold it like this. So I got like this big plaque.
Oh, shit.
Anyone that's performed at the Madison Square Garden, like a concert or fighting, they give you this.
Whoa. Cool. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's like a silver bar if I get it out of there. But yeah, pretty cool.
That's a great piece.
Yeah, I just had it chilling right here. It's like perfect. Yeah, see?
Holy shit. I've never seen that before, and I've had a million people on. That's incredible. What a great piece that is.
Yeah, I mean, there's not very many people that fought at Square Garden, right? So it's supposed to look like, it's supposed to look like a ticket. See, for UFC 217,
Holy
got
shit.
The barcodes on it. It's pretty cool.
That's a great answer.
Yeah. That is still happened to be right here.
Here we go. Last two things. I know you are a crazy healthy eater. What was your cheat meal after a training camp? Training camp, you fight, you win. What's your cheat meal? Your first, like, I'm going to go crazy right now meal.
I mean, it's kind of hard just to beat, like, a greasy pizza, right? Yeah. Like, me thinking about being out in New York, we went and got some just greasy New York pizza, right? Like, the ones you can fold in half and, like, drip grease in your mouth, I think, you know? Or sweets, right? Like, I don't ever eat sugar. So yeah. If I was, like, getting done with a fight, like, some sort of, like, Ben & Jerry's ice cream or something, or, like, some milkshake, something just, like, disgusting.
Yeah. It makes you up sick and have nightmares all night. And finally, a lot of people take pictures with you. Who's the last person you asked to take a picture with?
Oh, shit. Maybe Hulk Hogan.
Oh, that's a great answer.
I think it was maybe Hulk Hogan. Yeah, because I think Anthony Kiedis was before that. Was he? Yeah, probably Hulk Hogan, I think. We were both in Panama getting stem cells together. He was just happened to be down there.
Okay.
Getting stem cells, and I was in Panama, and we had like a private dinner with Neil Reardon. He owns Panama Stem Cell Institute, and so I got to sit right next to Hulk Hogan and have dinner with him. So I had to get a photo with him afterwards too. You know, like childhood hero, bro.
It's the greatest thing. Is like you can meet. Listen, I'm a big Yankee fan. I had Mariano Rivera on the show, and I'm like, oh shit, it's Rivera. It's this one. Hulk Hogan just takes you back. Like, holy shit, how crazy. When at the obviously you're sitting next to him. What are you talking to him about? Like, obviously, you're on that level of a fighter. You're a champion. Side of MGM. What do you talk to him about? Like, hey, Hulk?
We're talking about business, politics. Okay. Fucking, he's really into politics, right? I mean, seen him on, like, with the Republican Party stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of partying stories and just career stories. And he's asking about fighting. You know, we're both in the entertainment industry, things like that.
Dude, this was a blast. Not that you need it. You have over a million followers and stuff. Just plug everywhere because I'm a...
Yeah, hell yeah, man. So Wild Society Nutrition is our website. We're also Amazon. So if you're Amazon Prime, it's usually the easiest to get it. It shows up sometimes the next day. Free shipping, right? Other than that, we are at Sprouts Farmers Market right now. And then again, beginning of next year, we'll be in GNC and Vitamin Shop. But it's Wild Society Nutrition. Telling you right now, it's the best tasting protein powders on the market. We've got a lot of exciting stuff. We got energy drinks that are with organic green tea, no sugar, got nootropics in it that'll make you feel amazing. Probably make you talk your ass off like I am right now. but yeah, man, we got a lot of great stuff. So check us out. I would really greatly appreciate it because it's my full-time gig right now. I'm founder and CEO of it. And this is my office, right? I'm sitting in my office right now to where I'm usually doing Zoom calls with buyers and manufacturers, and I do every call every day. You know, it's a couple small employees and starting to grow so fast, too fast.
Bro, congratulations on making the change from wrestler to UFC champion to, listen, you had a downfall and then to fly back up, bro. The American dream, bro. Congratulations. We'll keep in touch. And I appreciate doing this, and Merry Christmas, brother.
Of course. You have a good one. Merry Christmas.
TJ, be good, brother.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Late.
When you're part of a military family, you understand sacrifice and support. At American Public University, we honor your dedication by extending our military tuition savings to your extended family. Parents, spouses, legal partners, siblings, and dependents all qualify for APU's preferred military rate of just $250 per credit hour for undergraduate and master's level programs. American Public University. Value for the whole family. Learn more at apu.apus.edu/military.